evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, December 11, 2017. Civil society groups want to be part of the forum to revive the collapsed 2015 peace deal.
In order for IGAD to let peace process succeed, the participation of that process should be truly inclusive. This means representation from women, refugees and IDPs, youth, political parties, military faith-based groups.
And an Egyptian military delegation is in Juba to help the South Sudan Army with projects.
This is a very golden chance for our people and our army, and particularly the branch of Military Economic Corporation for Egypt, which took us a long time educating our people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Civil Society Forum, an umbrella group of 24 advocacy organizations, have issued a communique calling on IGAD to do a better job at a forum in Addis Ababa to revive the collapsed 2015 peace agreement. Taban Kiston Santo is with the South Sudan Law Society. He says the high-level revitalization forum is the last chance for peace in South Sudan. Kiston says the various South Sudanese stakeholders and the Kiir administration should commit themselves to ending the conflict in South Sudan.
The violence has taken toll of the South Sudanese population and has actually moved from bad to worse since the beginning of the conflict in 2013. So the coming together of about 24 civil society organizations that met in Entebbe was to see how the civil society could actually take part and partially in the process of the revitalization forum. And also think that this should actually be taken seriously by the parties to the forum, in which we think this is the opportunity that the parties should take into consideration, and actually this should be the last opportunity that IGAD will be able to mediate to get a sustainable peace for the people of South Sudan.
When I read the final report of the pre-consultation for the forum that IGAD did in South Sudan, I saw that the civil society groups are going to be included in the forum, but you are complaining in your communique that the civil society groups would like IGAD to give accreditation to civil society groups. Are you telling me you have not been invited to take part in the forum that is scheduled for December 17?
At the moment, I think the group that met in Entebbe did not have accreditation at that particular time. However, we understood that some of the civil society organizations members have received that, but we are actually calling upon them to actually accredit them as participants, actually represent the voices of the civil society and actually also the voices of the people, of the common persons of the Republic of South Sudan.
You're giving a lot of conditions here, saying that you want to emphasize that the high-level revitalization forum, for it to succeed, it has to meet some minimum criteria. Could you tell us what are these criteria?
Some of the minimum criteria is outlined in under item 7 of the communique. We said one is an immediate and unconditional cessation of hostilities and permanent ceasefire to be agreed and implemented by all parties to the conflict. And we also think that, secondly, a clear time frame and indicators is set and communicated where the negotiation phase does not exceed a maximum period of 3 months. And at the end of the transitional period, results in a democratic, free and fair elections, where conditions for refugees and internally displaced persons are also favorable to participate in the elections. We also think that in point number 3 is punitive measures for non-compliance with the terms of the agreement are set and adhered to by all parties. In order for IGAD-led peace process to succeed, the participation of that process should be truly inclusive of the people of South Sudan. This means representation from women, refugees and IDPs, youth, political parties, military faith-based groups, traditional and disabled groups, and those in the diaspora should actually take part in the revitalization forum. Based on the previous analysis of the agreement on the resolution of conflict on South Sudan, after the signing of the agreement, the government came up with some kind of reservations over it. So we think that such kind of reservations should not actually come after the revitalization forum.
Talking about reservations, I came across a letter over the weekend coming from the office of the president of South Sudan, and he was complaining to the Ethiopian prime minister about certain issues in the pre-consultation for the revitalization forum. Your communique is also coming at the same time. Are you working together with the government on these issues?
Not exactly. We are working with the government. If you see our item number 4 on the communique, we say we also take note on the recent protest against the approval of the pre-forum consultation report of IGAD submitted by President Kiir. We are actually saying that we have taken note of that, and we are urging the transitional government of national unity to show leadership and also to participate in the revitalization process in spirit and in later to bring about sustainable peace in South Sudan.
It sounds like the civil society have no trust in IGAD's effort to mediate peace in South Sudan. Is that what I'm getting from you?
Not necessarily that way, but I think the agreement on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan has actually taught us a lot in terms of IGAD's ability to mediate processes, and also its inability to manage the peace process in itself. So in our communique, we ask them at this particular moment to look at some key things. And actually, if you look at our item number 9 on the communique, we say we ask parties, the HLRF, to sign People's Declaration for Peace at the launch of the Revitalization Forum. The declaration will be a public pledge addressed to the people of South Sudan that leaders will sign to demonstrate their commitment to ending the conflict.
That's Taban Kiston Santo, a member of the South Sudan Law Society. He was speaking with me from Juba earlier today. An Egyptian military delegation is in Juba for talks with the South Sudan Army on how to implement projects in agriculture, fisheries, and construction. A South Sudanese military official says cooperation between the two armies will help South Sudanese Army to transform into a modern and productive army. Nabil Biagio has more for VOA from Juba.
The 5 Egyptian military officials with the National Service Projects Organization are in Juba for the next 4 days to discuss building roads, bridges, and various industrial projects with South Sudanese officials. The SPLA Director General for Military Economic Cooperation, Major General Dao Alerabid, says his office will show the Egyptian team the kind of development that is needed in South Sudan and sign an agreement so that the two armies can quickly begin working on projects.
We have prepared a program for them. We'll take them through a program that we have planned for them. And then from there, we'll have a final day for what we have agreed on.
Abid says all SPLA forces in the country will benefit from the agreement if it's implemented.
We have prepared for them around 5 to 6 projects. They are there ready for picking up with us. SPLA will constitute the manpower for all the program we have conceived.
Last month, SPLM officials signed a declaration of unification agreement in the Egyptian capital, Cairo. Abid says South Sudanese soldiers and engineers can learn a lot from their Egyptian counterparts.
This is a very golden chance for our people and our army, and particularly the branch of Military Economic Cooperation for Egypt, which took us a long time educating our people. And now we are taking another step in the development and production.
In January, President Salva Kiir met with President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi and other Egyptian officials for 3 days in Cairo. He noted Egypt was the second country to acknowledge South Sudan's independence in 2011, the first being Sudan. Forces loyal to rebel leader Riek Machar accused the Egyptian Air Force of bombing their positions earlier this year. Both the Egyptian and South Sudanese governments dismissed the accusations. Abid says the entire country will benefit from building up the productive capacity of South Sudan's army.
The SPLA must be a productive army. So we are targeting area of production in agriculture, in animal resources, in mining, in industry, small industries, and so on.
The two armies are expected to sign a cooperation agreement on Friday. For years, Egypt has provided scholarships to South Sudanese to study in Egyptian universities and has set up development and relief efforts in the country. Observers say Egypt's involvement in South Sudan is strategic because of the country's control over the Nile River and the role South Sudan can play in the brewing dispute between Egypt and Ethiopia over their shares of water from the Nile. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Juba.
Some South Sudanese women rights activists say police and national security officers have been threatening them since they held a silent demonstration in Juba over the weekend to demand for an end to fighting in the country. The activists say police and national security officers confiscated placards and forced photographers to delete photos and video footage taken at the event. Wake Simon Wudu has the story for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of women whose mouths were covered with the tarp marched silently from Bullock football ground to the Presbyterian Church along Airport Road, where they held prayers for peace. They dressed in white and orange t-shirts and carried placards with the messages that read, "Stop the senseless war, we want peace now, stop raping us, and I need a home." But one of the activists, who prefers to be identified only as Betty for security reasons, says police and national security officers stormed the event at the Presbyterian Church, accusing the women of getting involved in politics.
The security person there with us, we didn't ask, but the police came direct. They came with the, they are just coming like they are going to fight us with their cars. They, you know, those things like if they are fighting for defending themselves. Yes, they have, and they're putting the element and they came with guns. I don't know if they are guns, or they are also, fire, tear gas, we don't know. They come and they block the road.
Betty says some security personnel came disguised as demonstrators wearing their match t-shirts. She says although no one was arrested, the storming of the event by the police officers frightened the women.
They leaked some video covering from people. And then they took those papers, the one they are writing on.
Betty says at least one activist was amounted to the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission to be interrogated over the matter. Betty says match organizers obtained permission from authorities to hold the event, so she does not understand why security operatives are threatening the activists. Efforts to get comments from Joburg State Police authorities over this story were not successful. One of the organizers of the march, who prefers to be identified only as Catherine for safety reasons, describes why the march was important.
You know, the country is already going through a lot. Any small gathering or small movement of people, especially with the noise and what, people panic. So we don't want to panic anyone. We just want to be silent because we think we have also talked a lot, and we have talked so many times and in several occasions. This one we have chosen to be silent, but our t-shirts are talking.
The women say their voices represent a common cry of many South Sudanese across the country and those in refugee camps. It will be 4 years on Friday when the conflict broke out in Juba and quickly spread to the rest of the country. Catherine says women continue to bear the brunt of the conflict.
Women are tired of war, and women want to see peace. As you could see in most of the t-shirts around, it is reading, "End the war. Women want peace now, now." This is a very strong message that we are sending to our people outside there, especially to the people that have picked arms. We are just destroying ourselves, and we are actually destroying the whole nation.
6 million people, roughly half of the country's population, are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance, according to the United Nations. More than 1.2 million are at risk of famine if humanitarian assistance is not delivered by early next year. The march was held a few days before the High-Level Revitalization Forum is scheduled to be held in Addis Ababa. The IGAD-led forum is aimed at revitalizing the 2015 peace deal, which was violated by both warring parties within days of its signing. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, health officials take HIV awareness campaign to refugees in Uganda. We'll bring details after this break.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how can we get more students interested in math and science?
To always have a practical approach to those things, to always relate it to the things around them in the environment, to make them understand that this is not something from the blue, it is around them.
A lot of them in practical work, because the subject is not more of a theory. It needs more practical so that it becomes more understanding, because it has more complex work.
Doing serious whatever, revision and practice, like practical work, then to motivate them actually. Those people who take those subjects, they do what? They earn, they've got chances of getting high quality jobs.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The business environment in South Sudan can be tricky for national and international groups. As INBO reports, there are some steps organizations can take to stay safe in the country.
There are three main areas both private and public organizations should look at to try to reduce security risks when working in places like South Sudan.
When they're operating in these more emerging parts of the world, that they are not confronted with any sort of possible risks to the organization, making sure that, number one, they have the right corporate liability coverage in place, two, that they're insuring their assets, and lastly, but certainly not least, is ensuring their personnel.
That's Abdullah Ahmed, Vice President of Global Organizations with Clements Worldwide, an insurance provider for expatriates and international organizations and NGOs. Ahmed says there are several things a company or organization can do to make sure their staff stays as safe as possible. He says make sure your organization has the right type of coverage. Ahmed adds it is also important that personnel has adequate preparations and a working knowledge of the country.
As an organization, as a person who's sending someone to South Sudan, if you get that 3 a.m. call, you know what to do. You know who to call. You're aware of the medical facilities in country where your people can be treated, and also knowing in the back of your head if their worst does happen, how that person will be evacuated. Are there safe zones? These are all things that an organization needs to look at.
But Ahmed says there is one thing a client should never share with his or her employees.
Make sure your staff doesn't know you have the kidnap and ransom policy. And we always tell our clients, you don't want, one of your employees to be, at a bar or somewhere in Mexico, having a drink and telling everyone at the bar that they have kidnap and ransom insurance, and then basically announcing that they're, there's a price tag on them. So, making sure you have those policies in place. Maybe you may not want to announce that you have the coverage, but you want to make sure that you have all of the endorsements and coverages in place.
And Ahmed says it is crucial for organizations to make sure that local employees are covered, to make sure they have the benefits and resources they need in the event that they become targets or if they experience difficulties during their work. Ayan Bior for VOA News, Washington.
South Sudanese refugees at the Mongola camp in Uganda's Adjumani district say resistance to HIV awareness programs and voluntary testing is easing at the camp as refugees learn more about the dangers of the disease. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Adjumani in northern Uganda.
Ugandan officials in Adjumani district held an event at Mongola settlement to mark World AIDS Day on Friday, a week after the rest of the world recognizes the day. Mongola is one of over 20 Ugandan settlements that together host hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese refugees. Officials say the event with the theme Our Health, Our Right was deliberately taken to a refugee settlement to help raise awareness about HIV/AIDS among the refugee population. South Sudanese refugee and health worker Chol Abraham says when refugees first arrived at the Mongola camp, few had any information about the disease.
Now, the time we come, it was so high because, let me compare to 2014, the time we had arrived here, it was so high. There was a time we having some campaign for hepatitis B and we get some of them are positive. In the camp, I was heard some rumors that people talk about them. They were just tell them that those are the very people are infected. Make sure those are very infectious. Make sure that they cannot have some good relationship with people. They have just came isolated themselves away from people.
The prevalence rate at the camp for HIV/AIDS is 3 to 5%, according to health officials. South Sudanese refugee and senior secondary student Martha Ajo-Goch says people with HIV/AIDS are stigmatized. Goch says that's why people living with HIV/AIDS are afraid to openly admit their status.
They cannot tell themselves to you. They'll just deny it. They are fearing to tell each other. Because if the person tell you, maybe you'll go and tell to somebody, and somebody that person also will go and tell to someone, which is not good. They bring shame for them.
Elijah Ball, chairperson of the Refugee Welfare Committee at Mongola Settlement, says people in the community who stigmatize those living with HIV/AIDS is caused by ignorance.
There was misunderstanding of the HIV infection. That maybe if you sit together, sleep together, eat together with the positive person, you can be affected. And that lead to isolation of the victims.
But Abraham says those attitudes are gradually changing as a result of awareness campaigns by NGOs.
We have a MTI team which has always come to the camps and give sensitization about danger signs of HIV and AIDS. I'm always seeing community dialogue doing every month. And also at the health center, they have counselors. If you need to know more about HIV and AIDS, you can go to Mongola Health Center for.
Onzima Henry, Program Manager for Global AIM, a national NGO that also supports the fight against HIV/AIDS in refugee settlements of Yumbe, Moyo and Adjumani districts, says one of the biggest challenges is getting past the aversion to a frank discussion about sexuality among South Sudanese.
There are certain languages which they don't accept, like you start talking openly about sex, sexual intercourse. These are some of the things which are treated as a no-go zone. So you have to work through the existing structures, and you should be advised when you are taking messages to them. Otherwise, you will experience, even if there is a very high turning up, eventually people will one by one, they will go away, and your sensitization will fail.
Despite the sensitivity of talking about what causes HIV/AIDS in South Sudanese communities, Henry says his organization remains committed to providing a wide range of health services in their settlements to reduce the spread of HIV/AIDS.
Our major focus is on behavior change communication strategy. Yeah, we raise awareness of the communities on HIV/AIDS and how they can prevent it, and services that are available for them to assess. We also do a lot of outreaches. Yeah, we take services nearer to the community by organizing voluntary counseling and testing of HIV/AIDS at community level.
And Ball says these efforts are paying off. He says as attitudes gradually change about people infected with HIV/AIDS, more people are coming out to get tested.
People are really attending the services of testing, and those who are got positive, they are taking ARVs, on a regular basis. Yeah.
A candlelit vigil was held Thursday night in memory of all those who have died of complications from HIV/AIDS in the Mongola settlement. At the vigil, Adjumani District Health Officer Dr. Boka George outlined the Ugandan government's policy on HIV/AIDS.
Our mandate number one is to say to it that nobody is infected by HIV. We want zero new infections. Our mandate is to ensure nobody dies from HIV for the people who are already infected with HIV. Our mandate is to ensure all people who are HIV positive are enrolled on treatment and receive the services.
Officials say the aim of holding awareness campaigns in the settlements for a second straight year is to ensure that the 250,000 refugees in Adjumani district know how to protect themselves against the disease and are aware of services available if they become infected. The number of refugees in Adjumani now exceeds by 20,000 the population of the host community, which stands at around 230,000. Officials say that's why it's important to bring the campaign against AIDS and HIV straight to the refugees. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Apiku in Adjumani.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sweet Home by Manela DK featuring Manasseh Matiang.
Shako on the beat.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah. Sweet home, I say home, sweet home. Tell me when you're ready, let me come for you. Home, sweet home. Home, sweet home. Tell me when you're ready, let me come for you. This nation is crying, yeah. The people are scattered, yeah. Some of them run to the bush and hide. Their eyes are full with the tears. Some of them run to the bush. Some of them run to the games. They run long way, long, long way from the south of the guns and the hunger. Journey of the life and survival. Nothing more sweet than hope. Nothing than good than hope. We come a long, long way, long, long way from a home, long way. Hiding in the bush, our body are shaking. Ba, 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 ba. Home, sweet home. I say home, sweet home. Tell me when you're ready, let me come for you.
We have been listening to Manela DK featuring Manasseh Matiang with the song Home Sweet Home. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Would like to know what you think about the show. You can reach us at southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us out on the Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
What you doing in our land that made me think, where is home? And that is why I want you.